This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 180 for Wednesday, February 17th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. You might even call it nerdy stuff that we're into. We cover everything from movies to television and books and websites and apps and all kinds of stuff. Joining me tonight is Brockett Vola from Biggest Fan Podcast. Welcome back, sir.
You had a flourish in my last name. That was pretty impressive.
I do my best. Bring in the A game tonight. I'm excited to be talking because last week there was no talking. last week I was sick. And then I was really concerned about having to cancel on Comics Coast to Coast. But then not only was I sick, but then Matt was sick. And then Brian wasn't feeling so great, I don't think. So, I mean, it's like the whole world had the flu this past week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. Laura and I went to a trip and... when we came back, we're pretty sure Laura got a sinus infection out of it
because
if you travel with a cold, one of the side effects is that crap goes up into your sinuses and then you're fumbling with something much, much more energy sapping and miserable than just your normal misery of a cold.
Yeah, I had a normal misery of a cold. It was literally 36 hours. Like, it was in, out, and done. Before I could really complain too much about it. And I work from home. So it's not like I had to deal with people. I didn't have to commute. I didn't have to get out of my sweatpants, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, it worked out well. Because on weekends, as I've mentioned before, I do have a part-time job, and that is dealing with the public. And I hate being sick and having to do that. So it was, at least it worked out. I could still get some work done, but when it came down to choosing to podcast or not to podcast, I thought probably best to just kind of save my voice. Not to mention, I don't think I would be sounding all that good to people.
Right.
You know, when you've got like a head, cause I had like a stuffy nose and all that kind of stuff. It was, I don't think it would be very, very attractive.
I listened to some people and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. The quality is so bad. It sounds so terrible. And instead, all they really sound like is like a really cool character actor. Like, yeah. They just go from like,
yeah.
Hey, I'm a normal podcaster to, hello, everybody. This is Steve. I'm sorry. My quality is so bad. And it's like, whoa, bring in the slow jams.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that happen one time when Peyton called me a couple weeks ago. I had been home for a couple days. I hadn't spoken to anyone. So like, I had done a lot of work, but it was all through email. And I hadn't gone out to groceries, so there's no even, you know, not even the slightest interaction between like you and a checkout clerk or anything like that. So when I answered the phone, I had this like kind of gravelly baritone Darth Vader going on, and he was like, "Whoa, what? Hi, what's going on?" I was like, "Nothing. How are you?" You know, and I'm just like, it's the first time I've said anything out loud in 48 hours, so deal with it. You know.
Yeah, but, I'm getting reacquainted to these vocal cords I've been given.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, precisely. Well, in addition to my body failing me last week, technology seems to have started to fail me all over my apartment. It is driving me nuts. I was working on a commission, and I noticed that my computer is being a lot slower than normal. And I just upgraded it a little bit like this past year, and I was hoping I was going to get longer out of it than just like 10 more months. So that was frustrating. Then I go and I want to watch a movie, and it was one of those movies where you really want surround. It was Tron Legacy, and I like it. I wanted to just kind of throw something on to relax, but I stopped it after a half an hour because I was just like, this is just not the same. My surround sound has been out for months, and I've just been using my TV speakers. It's fine. Most of what I watch is television shows anyway, so it's not a big deal. But this particular movie, I was just like, nope, I can't do it. Like, I need these deep bass rumbles. I need the environment that I remember from seeing the movie in theaters. And I wasn't getting it. So I stopped it. And then like literally either the same day or the next day, my television starts to crap out. So I'm watching, I didn't notice it at first because it didn't happen while I was watching it, but I have a set-top box and it does like a screensaver thing where it posts artwork and stuff up on the screen. So if I leave my television on, it's like having a rotating kind of art gallery up, which is nice. So when I'm home all day, I tend to leave that on. And then I looked up from my desk because I can see my television from my studio. And there's green bars across the whole thing. I'm going, oh, great. What's going on now? And I'm kind of crossing my fingers, like hoping it's a $5 HDMI cord that's crapping out on me, right? Like it's something I can replace in a heartbeat.
Right.
So I unplugged the HDMI and plugged it back in. Sure enough, it fixed it. It's like, okay, all right. That seems to lick the problem. Then it did it again. And I was like, oh, God. All right. Well, I have a spare HDMI. I'll wait to see if this persists. In the meantime, I decided to watch a television show that was on my computer, so I had to hook my computer up to my TV. So that's a different connection altogether. That's a VGA cable. Sure enough, halfway through the television show, actually this time watching it, I get not green lines, but like kind of a hazy, it was almost like a gray-pink kind of static on the screen. I thought, oh, crap. I don't think it's the cords, and I don't think it's the $200 set-top box. I think it's my television, which is going. And it started to do it a lot more frequently, like to the point where it will not last more than 15 minutes before it'll go, I'll get that green screen again. But turning the television off and on again fixes it. So it's a super easy thing to fix, but it's just, it's really, it takes you right out of whatever you're doing. None of these problems. The priority being the computer, the sub-priority being the television, and then the sub-sub-priority being the surround system, none of them are things that I can afford to fix right now. So my tech world is just crashing around me. And this television is old. I took forever to pick out this Sony Bravia Z series in like 2003.
Oh, so nice.
It's a nice television. It's 1080p. It's like 120 hertz. It's 46 inches. It's beautiful. It's a little bit thicker than most TVs these days, just because it was like 12 years ago. But now, if something happens to that TV, not only can I not afford one, I wouldn't have the foggiest as to what to buy.
Yeah.
For a TV. The good news is like a 1080p television is probably pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm not going to be paying. I think I paid $1,800 for it when I first got it.
Oh.
Like I don't think I'd have to pay that now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Our we have a 3D TV with like smart features, and I can't. It was futzing up at one point, and I was like, oh shoot, because we actually have invested in the dual Blu-ray 3D movies, and honestly it's the only type of 3D I've ever seen that I've actually enjoyed. Like in the theater it's just like wearing sunglasses, I don't like it. But our 3D at home is pretty good. It's really good, and if anything it's just like it's another small touch of good quality to the visuals that's pretty solid. So so I haven't been upset with it, but you know, part of me is like, well, crap, you know, if this one craps out on us at some point in the near, you know, in some future position, you know, will they even still be able to support 3D TVs? In which case it's like, well, we've lost an element to our DVDs, the way people who were like gripping onto their HD DVDs before Blu-ray destroyed them.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So
yeah. Anyway. And that's where I'm looking at too. Like if I'm going to replace my surround sound system, like I have a Sony amp and I have a set of JBL speakers. It's like five speakers and a subwoofer. It's not a huge system because I live in an apartment, so I mean I can't, you know, shake the walls, you know, every time I watch a movie. But the system my parents just got. So my mom and my stepdad picked up a Sony system, and the whole thing was all one kit. The Blu-ray player and the amp is one unit, and then there's a sub and five speakers. And it was crazy. It was something like $300 on sale.
Ooh.
And it wasn't even like a Christmas sale. It was just like your average kind of like, hey, we got 10% off this weekend. And I think I paid more than that for my amp alone when I got that. And I got that, geez, probably around the same time. No, I can't remember when I got it. It's almost as old as a TV. So for the sake of argument, you're talking around 2002 when I moved into this apartment. And I mean, the amp itself doesn't even have HDMI on it, right? Like I have to go optical to get 5.1. So, I mean, moving to a new amp would be a step up for sure. But I, like, it's one of those things like, I really invested a lot of time and energy and money into setting up the system and the speakers. I don't know whether it's this is the problem. I can't test. I don't know whether my speakers are gone or whether it's just my amp. I know my subwoofer is dead. Like that thing makes like cracking noises and stuff like that thing's done. There was a power surge and my fancy power protector did shit all. Yeah. So I was not impressed by that. So that was the summer because it must have been like a thunder and lightning storm when the power went out. So it's 6 months or more that things have been down, and I'd like to get another system, but at the same time I'm like, you know, maybe the thing to do is just spend $300, get the Blu-ray, get the surround system, not throw out the JBLs, just kind of put them in a box somewhere, and I mean the amp isn't worth anything. I could get rid of that. And then wait until I move into a more, you know, a home or something where I know I'm going to be for a very long time, at which point it's going to be worth investing, you know, $600 or more to put, you know, proper speakers in and all that kind of thing. The only thing that excites me about potentially getting a new television is getting a bigger one. Like, you know, and that's ridiculous because I have the 46 inches as I have it now. I mean, like, I only sit about 10 feet from it. Like, it's I don't have a big living room, so it's a fair-sized TV.
Right.
The centerpiece of the living room right now is the TV, but having, like, a 50-inch or something would be also nice for movies that you really want it, like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or something like that, right?
You're going to do... Well, my parents set out to get a new TV for the bedroom, and it came with smart features. So there's a solid chance that you won't even have to do anything in particular. You'll just find a TV and they'll be like, oh, it also comes with the ability to blah blah blah, because mm-hmm. ours does it, but we use the Xbox or PlayStation 3 like because we like the interfaces of those for mm-hmm. Hulu and Netflix, because through the TV it's a button but it like processes really slow, and it's like with the PS3, like you hit the button, it's like boom bam, like it's really fast because the whole machine's built for that instead of like cramming that technology into a small corner of the television.
Yeah, and I'm the same. I really enjoy my set top box and the whole ecosystem that I have with my house here, or my apartment I should say. It's really seamless, so I would keep going set top the way that I am. And not, I really, smart features on the TV would not be used, so they would not be a selling feature for me, which is, I guess, good in that I don't have to worry about, you know, anything like that. The one thing I want to try and stick to, if I can, which won't matter, I guess, when I get the surround, is that I want everything to still be the same brand, because...
Oh, interesting.
Not for any other reason other than I really enjoyed the fact that with an amp, a Blu-ray player, and a TV that were all Sony, one controller that mm-hmm. I didn't have to buy extra. Like, it was one of the controllers that came with I think it was the TV remote, could control everything. I didn't have to switch, nothing. The only time I ever had to switch and use the amp remote was when you wanted to change, like, the levels, like you wanted to tweak the volumes of the speakers and their location. That was one thing mm-hmm. that the television couldn't do. But everything else was fine. Like, everything else, just Blu-ray player, amp volume, everything was all, you press a button at the top of the TV remote, switch the unit, and you're good. Or, like, everything was smart. So, like, if you turn the television off, it would then turn the Blu-ray off and the amp off, and, like, you didn't have to go through
it. Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was really cool. So, and I don't know, I'm not an audiophile. I like quality stuff. I've trusted Sony for a while. I, you know, when you think about it, even though the television is failing, it's a 12 to 13 year old television, like, mm-hmm. and it gets used heavily. So, you know, that's not bad, you know, for an investment. And I don't know. Oh, I mean, maybe I could take it to a repair shop and it's only going to be $150 to put a new circuit board in it or whatever the problem happens to be, mm-hmm. you know, because maybe it's not the screen that's going. Maybe it's like the circuit board that all the HDMIs connect into. You know, mm-hmm. it could be that. I mean,
a surge or something. It might've just been a small thing that just got a little,
yeah,
old torch on it.
Could be, because I mean, when the TV is on, when it works fine. Like, there's mm-hmm. there's no problems while you're watching. It's just it's either working or not. So yeah, and it's not a power issue because everything stays on. It's just that things go pixelated and gross.
Do you have a console?
I do, actually. I mean, well, yeah, sort of. I'm in the process. A friend that had a spare 360. It was said that I could borrow/buy it. Mm-hmm. it was really old and it was sitting in his parents' place. It's a it's an Xbox 360. It's a white one.
Ooh, the old white ones.
Yeah, but it's not crazy old. It's not a slim, but it does have the wireless modem on the outside. Like it was an additional thing.
Yeah, that's what I had to get from
it's an additional thing that he had to put on. It still works great. It's a little louder than newer ones that I've used, but I mean, like, I don't care. Like, I just turn the television up loud enough that, you know, when I'm playing Black Flag, it sounds like I'm playing Black Flag and not, you know, not listening to the fan on the Xbox. But he was concerned that it wasn't going to work, or that it would work for a while and then not work because it was sitting at his parents' place for so long, because he has a new one.
Yeah.
So not to mention, I think he also has like a PS4. So he spends most of his time on the new system. So we're still working out, you know, payment and stuff like that. And we're talking about potentially a commission, whatever, which is awesome because I had a few Xbox titles around the house that I could not play because I didn't have access to an Xbox anymore. So, so I've been back playing, not very often. I think I've only spent a couple hours, but it's nice sometimes to get out of the studio and hang out and do some Black Flag. Cause Assassin's Creed was, a new title for me when I first got it, but it's become a favorite. I really enjoy the story.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I played, the Batman's, and I've been told, you know, if I like the Batman system and the city running around and the access and all that sort of stuff, that I would like the Assassin's Creed type of games.
Yep, I'll back that up because that's what I played first. I played the first two Arkham I played.
Right.
And then I get into Assassin's Creed. And it was, you know, you learn a couple new buttons, but really the feel is very similar.
Oh, interesting. Because the only ones that really interest, I know there's well acclaimed ones, but the American Revolution one, I think 3. Because I love the American Revolution and Black Flag because it has pirate ship combat are mostly the things that interest me the most.
Yeah, and that's so the greatest thing about one of the greatest things about Black Flag is when you can fast travel, but I found myself not doing that. So I would spend hours playing this game and really not get a whole lot done because I'm traveling so many hundred miles across the ocean. And it was just too much fun to sail the ship, listen to the sea shanties. Yeah, and then when there's a bad ship or a ship that you want to pirate, you're a pirate. Yep. You just fire the cannons and plunder the bitch, and then on you go. Mm-hmm. Like it just it makes you feel pretty badass. And you could fast travel, but then you skip all those opportunities to shoot at people, which I really enjoyed.
Exactly.
It's the only Assassin's Creed I've played. Lou recommends 2, I think, was his favorite of the series.
I've heard 2 is pretty monumentally amazing. 2, I guess, was so good that they made like 2 other spinoff games. Like
yeah, there was a couple in between. And that's where I got confused when I was looking back to see which ones I wanted to play. And I did a little bit of research, and I'm not a big video game aficionado, so I kind of got lost as to what went where. I'm sure I could get, you know, Lou could set me straight as to what the order of things was and whatever. But I just decided to stick with Black Flag and just replay it as opposed to get another one. Plus, like, it's been so long since I've played the titles that I have that they're all going to be new to me. The other two that I'm actually looking forward to replaying because I really enjoyed them was the Transformer Cybertron. There's the Fall of Cybertron and War for Cybertron. And both of those are super fun. Yeah.
Yeah. If you like Transformers.
Yeah.
But, although I guess I've heard they're fun just in general.
They're great games because what I like about them is that they're nothing like the movies. So forget anything about the Michael Bay stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then they're also nothing like the 80s cartoon. They're set on Cybertron. So they basically had like the archetypes to work with and the character personalities, but then for story and for design, they had a whole, just it was blank slate. And it's just super fun. Like and it feels like Transformers, but then it feels like a Transformers. Like I don't want to play a Transformers game that looks like the 80s cartoon.
Sure.
You know, like that. I think we're past that.
Mm-hmm.
So playing a Transformers game with a modern sensibility, but then the character voices and everything, and the feel and the binary kind of, you know. I am here to destroy everything. No, you're not, Megatron. I'll save the day. Like, you know, like that kind of campiness was in there. It's like, it's perfect. And you feel powerful when you play. Like, you feel like a pretty badass robot, which is nice.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But what is the excuse for them being on their own planet but needing to be semi-trucks and race cars?
So they're not.
Oh,
they're Cybertronian vehicles, and it's based on basically the size of the robot. So Prime doesn't turn into a truck, but he turns into kind of a rig. He doesn't have anything that he tows, but he certainly has like six wheels and a big front on him, and he's a little bit more streamlined. Bumblebee turns into like a little yellow hover car. Like he's not even, I don't even know if the wheels touch the ground for any of the actual, I'm not sure if any of the wheels touch the ground now that I think about it. And then anything that was airborne, like a plane, it's very much a spaceship. And it's weird in that it still looks like it has a cockpit, you know, like they still have kind of a front to it, but it's not, there's no place for someone to sit. It's just kind of like aerodynamically a missile shaped object is still going to travel through any kind of atmosphere better. So they're kind of going that way, but it could be shaped like a star, or it could be shaped like it'll have six wings or something. Like they're pretty cool looking. And the fact that what I like about it is that transforming is like a button. You just click it and then you flip over and that's it. So it's not like this big process that you have that gets old. Like you can really switch from plane to robot, which is advantageous depending on what kind of fight you're in. You know, like, because sometimes when you're in a vehicle mode, your big gun is more powerful than when you're a robot.
Right.
Yeah. So, or in case something like Bumblebee, you're a hell of a lot faster when you're a car. Then, you know, so if you're in trouble, like, and you've got to escape bad guys, like, you transform and get the hell out of Dodge, right?
So your escape button.
Yeah.
Smoke loud.
Yeah. Bumblebee's out. Pretty much. You know, I don't know if there's actually a smoke screen, but there's definitely, like, you can definitely drop, like, flares and grenades and stuff like that. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
The check's coming after the meal. Bumblebee transforms and is out. And an optimist left with the bill.
Nice.
Nice job, Bumblebee. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
So do you have a console?
Mm-hmm. I have a 360, PS3, and the only new gen, I guess, is the Wii U. I've been really happy with all of them. The newest addition was getting the Wii U because the Wii was doing nothing and Smash Brothers came out and it's Smash Brothers. But at least with the Wii U, the interesting thing is that I literally can play it like a tablet on the gamepad and have the TV on something else. So, you know, if we have a random show in the background we're both watching, but I'm not really super engaged, I can play on there. Or if we just don't want the TV on, but, you know, I want to go sit on the radiator box by the window, which is not advantageous to watching the TV, I can still play everything right there. So it's kind of cool. It kind of makes like a localized tablet, but it still has all the joystick features on the side. So I'm still not doing like, you know, there's touchscreen games, but, you know, for Smash Brothers, I'm still doing that right there. Mm-hmm. So that's really super, super useful. And other than that, you know, it's just whichever, I guess, 360 or PlayStation 3 game I'm on. I was binging real, real hard on 360 for a while. That was in the living room. And then the PS3 was in the bedroom, which was pretty much used for the bedroom TV, with occasionally me playing in there. But I kind of have to sit oddly on the bed to play, so it wasn't super good. But I made the switch when I knew I was going to get the new Diablo 3 Collector's Edition. I got me and my buddy for his birthday, I got him a copy of it because, you know, he's been wanting one for a while. He didn't get to play it. I've actually played through all of the regular base Diablo 3 on my Mac, which somehow managed. Talking about old, it's a 2009, and when that game came out, I think it was like 2012 or 13.
You and I have the same computer.
Yeah. And it's we do? Well, I got a news for you if you didn't already know this. Apple Store has designated this as a retro computer. If you felt old with your technology, you have a retro computer.
Yep.
I learned that when my disk drive broke, and they're like, we could fix this, but also this will be retro in like a month. And I was like, no, maybe not. I feel like I came in with two sticks and said, my sticks no longer work. And they're like, dude, everyone's got lighters. We don't even need this useless stick and flame thing. It was fascinating to see the new Apple keyboards and that they don't have disk drives. And Yeah, but as far as technology is, I'm really, really happy still with the PS3 and 360. Plus, there's such a backlog of games, particularly for the PS3, since I got that only about 3 years ago. So there's quite a few PS3 games that, like, people, like Last of Us, still haven't played. I even got that with the system. And then I had just gotten through... Shoot. Oh, no, I just, one of my friends just gave me Uncharted Drake's Fortune, which I should really, really, really sit down and play those, because I'm such a massive Indiana Jones fan, but I've been on such a big, big, like, magic magician kick, which is why it's so fascinating when I saw the show notes. But, like, I think we're about to start up a D&D campaign, so I get really interested in reading up about sorcerers and warlocks. And then I'm playing Diablo 2 or 3, and even though I'm playing Crusader, like, you know, there's a sorcerer and the witch doctor.
Yeah.
So I've been on, like, in a really big, like, I went through a Star Wars kick where I really, 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 really wanted to play Jedi type things. Didn't really have access to it because I was like, I could try and play Knights of the Old Republic, but I don't know if my computer is going to support it. And then by that point, I had Diablo 3, so I just kind of channeled the want of a Jedi warrior into a Crusader, and now it's just transitioned back to fantasy, which I think we've had this conversation before, but I'm pretty staunchly fantasy the more and more I think about it.
Yeah, like if you had to choose between sci-fi and fantasy?
Yeah, even though superheroes are sci-fi, like that's... I mean, like, sure, some of them use magic, but if you really want to get down to nitty-gritty, so much of them are kind of based more on the sci-fi elements.
Yeah.
And I couldn't live without superheroes, but, yeah, there's something about magic and the world of fantasy that really pulls me back.
I would argue that superheroes are a nice balance between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, technically, like, their powers and the technology and the stories are kind of written in a sci-fi universe. But the personalities, I mean, Superman is a knight, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I mean, that kind of, the archetypes are all fantasy stuff, you know, like you've got the people that are more, you know, psychological powers and mental stuff and the wizards. And then you've got the physical people like Superman and Batman. And then you've got, you know, all the in between and what would appear to be magic, like Poison Ivy and I'm trying to think of other ones that have, Green Lantern, like stuff like that, which more magical, you know. It's a neat kind of twist on both of them.
Yeah, that's true. It's always interesting when they do those changes, like 1609, when Neil Gaiman made all the Marvel characters back, and you get to see, you know, how people would quote-unquote react to, you know, if these Marvel characters were in a setting in which it's not modern day and they're, you know, in jaunty, you know, foppish garb, you know, that the bard would wear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of thing is really interesting. Because if you, like you said, you know, if you really break it down, you can kind of make... I actually made a joke that I was going to try and make a D&D character version of Link from Zelda. I was like, which, I mean, it's fantasy, so that makes sense. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you can kind of boil things down. The way I like to boil down sci-fi into Westerns, because everything sort of goes in different progressions and you just add a new layer to it. And superheroes are just reactions to sort of war stories and Westerns. And you know, most of those are just reactions to epic hero stories, which we tend to think of ancient Greek stuff as having magical properties, and that sort of ties into that stuff. So, yeah, it's really cool. I love that sort of stuff.
I'm trying desperately while you're chatting to find the artist that I want to mention, but there's someone that I favorited on DeviantArt a long time ago. Had did a series of Avenger drawings, or paintings, really, and they're all of the Avengers, like Thor and Hulk and everybody, as if they were medieval kind of warlocks and warriors. And
awesome.
Hulk is like a big green Viking looking dude.
Like
he completely broke any kind of existing model that you have in your head about what these characters usually look like.
Sure.
And it's so cool. Like Thor looks ridiculous. And Black Widow looked, I feel like she was like kind of like a, almost like a ninja. Like it was really kind of twisted. Iron Man was a knight, So he had all his armor, but there was no technology at all.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
It was really cool. If I find them, I'll put them in the show notes. But it was a really neat take on taking like all the sci-fi stuff and then throwing it back in kind of like a medieval sort of motif. I really enjoy like there's a lot of fan art out there, and I like DeviantArt, but there's a lot of stuff where people can get really interesting and really kind of unique takes. And I don't mean just like gender bending, like drawing Superman as a woman or anything mm-hmm. like that, but like really kind of cool things like taking, you know, an iconic, we'll say Warcraft character, and then drawing them as if they're a sci-fi character.
Right.
And what does Thrall look like if he was a space orc as opposed to just like a, you know, a warrior orc? Like that kind of stuff I always think is really cool. Because it takes a certain amount of art direction and imagination and kind of maintaining themes, but then still kind of creating something new.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And there's something about sci-fi paintings that there's always that really high contrast, right? Like a lot of stuff just look like Tron, you know? Like
yeah.
There's always glowy bits on the armor.
Yeah.
I think I just got a link from the chat room. It's the Avengers by the Durain, and there's four R's in his name. No, that's not the one that I was thinking of, but that's really cool. That's something very similar. Thanks for the link, Sam. That's awesome. But I'll have this one in the show notes, and I'll see if I can find the new one too. But it's, yeah, there's some really, really cool stuff out there. Yeah. For me, I've been playing actually a lot of Warcraft. I haven't been watching a lot of TV, and I was sitting here listening to you talk about your Crusader, is it, in Diablo?
Yes.
That's like a paladin, right? Like that's a
yes,
holy
yes.
big yeah, shield, just, big mace, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So for me, my main in Warcraft is actually a paladin. And then I've been playing with some new friends on a new server. I'm sitting on this boost to 90 and have had for like 3 years. I thought, this is stupid. I'm sitting on this for no reason. I'm hoarding this thing for no reason. I might as well just boost to 90 on another server and join the friends that are playing on the Alliance side. So I boosted a Draenei Mage. So I'm switching servers, I'm switching factions, and I'm switching from a melee class, like heavy armored, like taunt, damage dealer, well, not really a damage dealer, but I'm like a tank, to a don't blow on me because I'll fall over dead, yeah. You know, Draenei fire mage. Yeah, so I'm shooting, and everything I can attack from like half a screen away. It's amazing. And I'm actually discovering, as much as I like my paladin, and mentally when I roleplay in a game like this, I think paladin. Like I think like big, heavy dude, like protector, right. You know, the guy in front. Like that's my role. But when it comes to this mage, I'm really enjoying lighting people on fire and having them drop dead before they even reach me. Like, they, you know, you get into a room and people are like, hey, you're not supposed to be here. And they start running towards you. And then they just fall out my feet on fire before they even get to me because I'm just shooting out so much damage. Like, my offense is my defense. Right. And I've been really enjoying it. I'm just sad that my computer, as you said, is, what did you say, retro? No.
Yeah, it's retro.
Retro. because I have to have everything on the lowest setting. So it looks like a little red, you know, ball graphic that shoots out from my hand. When I'm playing with other people, I'm sure it looks like a crazy, you know, flame ball of death. But for me, it looks like a red basketball.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is sad. But it's been a lot of fun. And I can also do it while I eat. So if I'm having soup or something simple for dinner, then rather than watching television in the living room or whatever, I can sip a cup of soup, take an hour long break and kind of pop in and do some story stuff. And I'm really enjoying it. It's been nice to kind of get that continuous story and get a story from the Alliance side of things for Draenor. Cause I do enjoy Warcraft, and I've been paying for it, and I've been playing just enough to say that I'm earning, like I'm justifying the $15 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've been playing more in place of television shows that I have dropped because they were stupid, I find I've got a nice balance now where I'm just decided, you know, I don't really need to watch all these television shows. I can just turf the ones that are failing for me. It's a different world we live in now where everything is on demand at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So like if someone comes back to me and says, oh no, the first half of the Shannara Chronicles were terrible, Joel, but after that it turned into this magical 3-season arc of glory. And you're just like, all right, well, I'll catch it on Netflix later. Like, you know, like I don't have to watch it right now because I would rather do other things. And playing with friends on Sunday night is a fun time on the there's a Skype call, and it's nice to kind of be social in that way.
It's interesting because I'm the same way. I always think of Paladin style. D&D fans out there, like, we're about to do a 5.0 campaign, and I'm going to play a fighter, which is really great. You know, you're basically a master of at arms. Like, you can use any kind of thing you're proficient with. And in 4.0, I played as an Avenger, which is just essentially like, you know, like a cloaked holy warrior with a big old sword, you know, doing like really cool stuff. And I love that stuff. And that's always what I gravitate to. But like, there's been something, and I think honestly it kind of awakened just after Star Wars came out, but when Laura and I were getting ready to go to, because we just went down to see my parents in Orlando. We spent 3 days at Disney and 1 day at the Universal Studios Parks, which got us to go to both the Harry Potter Hogsmeade and Harry Potter Diagon Alley. And Laura started listening to the audiobooks and rewatched all the Harry Potter movies in preparation. So that was in my system. I was thinking about the Jedi and their swords and the Force. And then I was playing Diablo 3, and then I'm looking at character builds, and I'm just like, you know, I love my sword and shield. I love my bash, but like, and I love like barbarians in particular. But there are other times I'm just like, you know, it is kind of very seductive to just be able to go spark and then like something erupts with lightning. Mm-hmm. When you're so used to like grind, like, because, you know, when you're in the front lines of whether it's in a video game or you see a character like Captain America's scenes are really cool because, you know, he's using his shield and he's doing a lot of hand-to-hand, and that's really awesome. But then there'll be times where you're just like, you know, if you have like Hawkeye or Iron Man would just pull off one like blast of something, and that's really cool, and you know, that sort of thing, and that sort of just like, wow, the all inspiring power of just doing just enough, which has really been interesting because I've gotten also off of podcasts to more books and been catching up with some books. And so, yeah, it's just magic has permeated the games and the stuff I've been really taking in. Really and truly, the only way it hasn't affected is probably television, because the Flash era Legends all came back. So those really dominate my extra hours of television. But that's good because I will always have like an itch for superheroes. So that satisfies that, whereas everything else, when it comes to extracurriculars, is very much based on magics and wizards and that sort of thing, is really super exciting for me right now.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Kyle on a regular basis does D&D stuff. Have you done any D&D with Kyle?
Oh, yeah. No, Kyle was my first DM. I played a campaign with him, and then I played a long-term campaign, which is where my Avenger came in, based off of... oh God, I can't believe I'm blanking his name. The Last Airbender, Aang. I basically made like a young, like, hey, I'm gonna go out and save the world, and then the world's gonna hit you on the ass as you try and save it, type of character. And Kyle was great because, you know, if you're not aware of who Kyle Ferguson is, he's just really good at voice acting. So he produces a lot of characters. He loves to create all these storylines. He was an awesome DM. So I kind of fell in love with Dungeons & Dragons because of that, and having an improv background. I just try and tell people, like, you know, it's not just sitting around and just trying to work statistics and that sort of stuff and sort of, like, being grumpy or putting on little outfits and stuff. Really and truly, when the best times were happening, it was, like, quite a few of our friends who all have theatrical backgrounds, so everyone's buying into their character. Mm-hmm. And halfway through whatever the quest is, it could be this awe-inspiring, like, save these angels at the edge of oblivion, and we will still find reasons to just crack the worst jokes or the like most corny moments, and like we will just like burst out laughing. Like we'll just set up situations. Like poor Kyle had to deal with situations where he'd run into town, and it's like, oh, this is fun. Well, here's a flower person, and let's mess with them. And so he has to deal with this thing, and our friend Chris was always hitting on NPCs, and Kyle has to role play those NPCs. So we're like, Kyle, you're practically dating our Chris, and that sort of stuff is awesome. So yeah, I know Kyle's super super awesome, and when he was around here, it was great to play that. It, not only losing the personal recording space, but losing your DM. I mean, it's tough. It really is. It's losing your DM is like losing like a doctor that you really have trusted for most of your life, and now you got to go out and find a new doctor, and you're like, no, who can I trust? I don't want to do research. I don't want to test these people out. But well,
That's how that Sunday night thing came around for me. Is that it used to be a Sunday night tabletop D&D group. Someone just down the street from me. So I mean, I don't have a car, so I mean, it was easy to get to. It was a lot of people like minded. It was really really cool. And then the DM moved to the other side of the city, and everybody kept it up for a while, and then schedules changed,
it's the worst.
And then it became difficult. And I mean, when you lose momentum on something like that, it's hard to maintain.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of the players moved into World of Warcraft. So, like, same but different. But, I mean, I don't necessarily know that people RP out loud, not to my knowledge, but in your head, you can still tell that, and through conversation, you can still tell that people are enjoying the characters that they've rolled because of the kind of immersive nature of video games. I'm kind of splitting the difference. Like the Draenei are the biggest character in the game, so I still feel kind of at home in a big lumbering character, but then it's really kind of cool to also be like the fireball guy, you know? It's neat.
Did you roll a paladin in D&D?
Close enough. I guess maybe a warrior.
Oh, a warrior. Okay.
It was a dragonborn.
Dragonborn.
The character's stats were something like he was 6'5", 250 pounds or 300 pounds or something.
That's about average, yeah.
Yeah, and compared to everybody else on the squad.
Oh, yeah. No, you're like, a monster.
I was a monster. And and the weapon that I had was a maul.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it was really tough for me to contribute to a fight because I would miss a lot just out of pure bad luck.
But when you hit.
But if I connected with something, that was it.
Yeah, exactly. That's how my first dwarf was. He was a barbarian dwarf, and it was like, it was crushing. I think the first time I ever played, I missed everything, so I really hated D&D. And the second time I ever played, it was like this, F it, screw this crap. And there was this moment where this thing was trying to run away, and I was just like, whatever. So I charged it, and I critted on it. And Kyle is so, like, he, like, is so great with giving, like, a good DM, like, a good storyteller will really feed into when he feels, like, the morale's waning or, like, you know. And he is just like, you blew the arm off this doppelganger. This thing is decimated. And like my character was like, you know, raw, dumb old dwarf. So of course it was like one of the greatest moments for homage. But that's funny. Do you happen to know if it was 3.0 or 4.0? Did you have lots of like, ability cards? Did you have lots of like ability cards, specifically named abilities?
I didn't get very far. I only played for about 3 or 4 weeks before everything came to a close. I don't think
it
I was much
was
of a
about at 3.0 then.
Yeah, it might have been 3.0. It could have been 4.
Did you have at wills? Does that ring a bell?
No.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say maybe 3.
Yeah, probably 3 or 3.5. I know.
Yeah.
5.0 now is more what, because what was interesting. Sorry to go on our strange D&D change.
No, it's all good.
But what was interesting is apparently D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, was like, okay, we just have our sheets and we're just going to talk out loud. And then eventually people were like, well, you get into massive arguments. So people start to use miniatures and laying out a grid. And then that evolves and that evolves and that evolves. And then video games happen and all these other things are happening. So apparently like between around 3.0 to 4.0. 4.0, they're like, look, you know, World of Warcraft exists, all these things, so we're going to try and give every like a lot of combat centric. We're going to, everything's going to be lots of dice and lots of aggro, and like, you know, you literally almost created little characters had so many different stat powers and that would generate. So it kind of could be laid out like you would for World of Warcraft or Diablo 3 or something like that. And then you get to a certain point where you're like, you would forget. Like, you literally would have so much to remember. Like, you'd be in a fight and you'd be like, I could shoot this guy in 8 ways, one of which does fire, one does acid. And then, like, you would, it would be like you'd have to audit your own character. Mm. And I love combat and that sort of stuff. But 5.0 recently has just kind of like wiped it. You basically just kind of attack and it's back to you describing what you want to do. If you want to, you know, we were in a group where I was like, we're not going to say, I gloriously pull my sword and I doff my hat. But if you do something like that, it'd be like, I doff my hat and then, you know, you flip off some goblins. And we, more than anything, we'd crack a lot of jokes. We'd be serious in certain moments when we had to talk to, like, kings and stuff. But then, like, we'd all, like, because being an improv background, you just see these moments for, like, Monty Python-esque moments when you're like, you're the knights of what? And then, you know, you get into a bit and literally you spend like 15 minutes of it. So I can totally understand like that sense of community or just like a group of people coming together to just kind of, you know, do the huzzas for a few minutes is really infectious.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it was, I mean, we had to respect everybody's time too. So even though there was a grander campaign, the bite-sized moments had to be kind of, you know, a couple hours, like kind of 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday night, and then everybody had to go because people had to work in the morning and that kind of thing. And also, it was pretty disruptive for the hosts, you know, like for that apartment to have, you know, 6 to 8 people in it in the living room for a couple hours.
Big,
you know,
campaign.
Yeah, no, it was, and it was cool. So we would usually end up with like a bit of adventuring and an encounter.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of like, that would be kind of the end of it. And the encounter might be the beginning of several, or it might be just one thing. It all depended on how the story was going. But it was pretty cool because it allowed Jonathan, the DM, to then keep pretty easy notes on like, you know, well, we should, it's, you know, it's 9:45. If we stop here, it's a good stopping place. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be in the thick of something complicated and it's going to be kind of hard to remember where we picked up.
Right, exactly.
So it was great. It was good for the first real D&D experience I've ever had because it was bite-sized. I mean, it was like a 2-hour movie, right? You know, like it was something that you could process and remember from week to week. And my issue came when I got busy and I couldn't go every week. And the cool thing they did for RP, for people that couldn't make it, was just like your character was there, they contributed, you gained a bunch of kind of group XP, and then if you're there the next week, then you can just kind of continue on, and you don't really have the camaraderie, but like you're still kind of there.
Yeah.
It was like a group of hired guns was essentially what, like everybody was a bounty hunter for the sake of, you know, simplifying everything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It was good. I would absolutely do it again. I want to do more. The next time I go on vacation down to Utah, turn to Nerdtacular, I had a really good tabletop experience there with a Star Wars one, as a matter of fact. And
Edge of the Empire?
I don't remember. Again, it was meant to be like, hey, here's the 90-minute, you know, bite-sized kind of encounter with a bunch of droids and just kind of have fun with it. I didn't know enough about tabletop gaming to even ask what version it was.
Sure, right? Sure, exactly. Yeah.
It would have been 2013.
Huh.
Whatever that was.
I was introduced to Edge of Empire because Kyle and Ben Zweifeld, is that the same again? Ben?
Zweifel.
Zweifel. So, yep. I'm sorry. Both of them were working on stuff, and Ben was such a freaking overachiever, badass. We all described, it was Kristen, Kyle's wife, and me and Ben, and we described our characters, and by the next Skype session, he had drawn all of us. It was, like, really impressive. I was like, holy crap. But that was really cool. And it was fun. Like, I would play that one as well. I friggin' loved being my rundown, you know, beat up kind of space mercenary junkie kind of guy. Just, you know. getting from job to job. So I pretty much fall in love with characters I create in my own brain. And then if I have the opportunity to tabletop play them, it's like the greatest moment of my life.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, like I was sad I didn't have more free time because I really wanted to draw my Dragonborn. And then if I had even more time, draw other people around the table, like other characters. Because then you could like print them off 3 inches tall, and instead of using Lego minifigs, we could go and actually use little images of the characters, right? Which would be so much cooler.
Oh my goodness. Gosh, I didn't even think about having an artist in the group who could do that. We have Lego minifigs, and I managed to find ones that would fit everybody's race. It's really tough when you need Minotaurs and Warforged. But
I mean, you could even use like a Lego plate.
Sure.
For the figs, like, because everything's a grid, right? It's not like it's a hexagon setup. Mm-mm. It's all like a square.
It's perfect. Yeah. The fig plate with the four dots is almost like one dot too big when we played in the standard little squares that you get at the hobby shop. But for the most part, you know, just otherwise when there's a big cluster of 1,000 minions around you, it works out. It's fine.
Yeah.
Plus, you get to use Legos. It's
yeah, great. Well, yeah, exactly, right. And now I want to go play with Legos. Jeez. Well, we barely touched on half the stuff I wanted to talk about tonight because it was such a cool conversation about Warcraft and tabletop gaming, which we don't really talk about much on this show because I guess just because I haven't had that much of a chance. I mean, I have groups of friends, but a lot of us do online stuff or I hang out with people individually. Like I don't have a crew of people that get together. A lot of the people I used to play board games with have children under 5. So, kneeling them down for an evening of board games is a difficult task to say the least. But before we wrap up the show, I do want to get into something that you had mentioned that you were reading because you're reading something that I'm watching.
Yeah, it's really weird. We're like in a situation where I don't know if one of us, we could probably both spoil something for the other because of the nature of television versus book.
Right.
But it's really weird. You're watching sci-fi's The Magicians based on Lev Grossman's books. There's three of them. And how many episodes are there so far?
So I just watched the fourth one the other day.
Okay.
And I mean, so because of spoilers, I won't get into it. And I also really encourage people to just take my word for it. It's really good and just go watch it. Like it doesn't take very long to start building the world. And I'm really into it. And it is about as an adult show as you can find that's fantasy related on TV.
Interesting.
It's all the things that I wanted from Shannara Chronicles that I wasn't getting, minus the fact that it's set in modern day. Like it's a today. Like there's the outside magic world, there's the inside magic world, and the outside magic world is just us right now, 2016. Whereas in Shannara, it's this real fantasy realm and it's in the future and like it's all kinds of stuff. But the seriousness of magic and the fact that these people, they are, you know, young people learning to do magic, there's relationships, they swear, like just, it's, the versions I'm getting have swearing bleeped out. I wish it didn't, because man, it's just such a raw show. Like, it's just nice to see, like, it's something that you want to see on, like, Showcase or HBO or whatever, right?
Yeah, that sort of thing. I could definitely, when I was first hearing about these, you know, everyone has their one sentence pitch, and the pitch of this is Harry Potter in college. Like that was their argument. Yeah. So I started to listen to it, and actually a friend of mine sort of told me that he didn't like the first books because of something. And then when he heard I was basically during the conversation, he didn't get to what he didn't like about it, possibly because of story relation, not like the build of the story or, you know, the structure of the story. Mm-hmm. But it's really fascinating. I imagine just based solely on previews that it's and contents, it's pretty obvious that it doesn't spoil anything for either of us, that it is essentially a high-functioning magician's college.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this new – and you enter the world through a character who doesn't, as far as the books know that there's real magic. But he – in the books, they keep going back to this one book series that I don't know if it's real or not, but it feels very much like a knockoff of Narnia. Like he keeps he like uses his reading of these Narnia books about Fillory mm-hmm. to like describe the surroundings of how he's like, this world feels like Fillory because it's weird and magic's going on. But I think an audiobook, it sounds like I have like 11 hours left. So I might be, and that's of, gosh, I don't know, maybe 21. So I might be halfway through. Mm. It progresses pretty fast. I just know time-wise, as far as time's concerned, it's progressed very quickly time-wise. So I don't know if the television show is like every episode's a day or every episode's like a series of weeks or something.
Oh, but it's definitely more time than a day.
Okay.
I can say something that doesn't reveal any spoilers. There's a game that's played by the students. In my mind, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like the equivalent of Quidditch.
Right,
right.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah,
and that just happened. That was the fourth episode.
Was it like a championship or like?
No, it was the first time. It was the first introduction of the whole thing.
Of the whole thing. Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and mentors were watching. That was the premise. I don't want to say more than that, but that's where we are in the series so far.
Okay, I think I literally just got to something where that was involved, which is crazy because I knew this was going to happen. I was like, you know what? I got these audiobooks because, you know, I have my Audible, which I do love Audible, but it's sort of this thing where I subscribe for like 3 months and then when I'm backlogged, I cancel it, mm-hmm. use my tokens and then get to my books. And this is my off season for podcasts. Like, so I just listen to my audiobooks and finally Magicians has engaged enough where like I just want to listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
It's how I get through the, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire books and that sort of thing. But like, it just got, it's a slow, slow burn because as far as the book's concerned, I don't know if the television show has a different setup, but there's really no immediate conflict. It's just pretty much you're entering this world and he's discovering things and the conflict's really more like situational, like, oh, I'm so befuddled by this thing or this person's
yeah.
irritating me.
Yeah, there's,
but there's no like Voldemort, you know.
No, exactly. A little bit of that, but not a lot. I think they might have had to adjust some things to kind of get that going in the television series to
okay.
hook people. But it's a kind of a quick kind of like, ooh, this is bad, and then it goes away. And then you've got this thing that's bad hanging over you, like, when's that coming back? So like it kind of keeps you
got to there in the book.
Yeah, it kind of keeps you there. But it's just as it's what I like about it, and what's so difficult to do is in a world where Harry Potter exists,
right?
To do a downtrodden kid going to magic school in college and not have it be a complete and total copy, or have mm-hmm. everything that happens immediately make someone think of Harry Potter.
Right.
It's a bang up job because like everything is different. Everything is different. And it's handled in a slightly different way as far as like just powers and what magic is and how it's used. And like they really do a good job of immersing you into the television show. And I think maybe because it doesn't have any wild fantasy, like when they're at the magic school, it's just a magic school that's got a spell on it so that people that are outside of it can't see it. It's not like it's in some right. magical realm of Hogwarts, you know, like it's
yeah.
upstate New York somewhere, you know.
And they have to study really hard. Like they go into a detail in the books of how like miserably annoying it is to study
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, you know, like you get the idea yeah. that these kids are experiencing the same sort of things that like an English major does, right?
It's right,
like,
exactly.
Oh God, like I have to read more shit, you know.
And
like,
it's interesting because like you said with the magic thing, it's but then this goes back to my magic fascination right now is like there's so many different things. Some wizards use wands, staffs, use their hands. Some people study books a lot. So this is a drastically different form of learning magic and implementing magic and even like the classifications of magic than Lord of the Rings, but also Harry Potter, like you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest difference that I think kind of sets the Magicians apart is that everything you do has a cost.
Uh-huh.
Like, it doesn't matter whether you're doing a simple card trick or, you know, doing a larger spell, but it gets exponentially larger. So if you want to do something like, you know, try to save a puppy's life or something like that, there needs to be two of you for starters. Like, you can't do it on your own. Like, stuff like that is really interesting. It's like, you can't generate enough energy to do it if it's a large enough spell.
Uh-huh.
And I found that very interesting. So it limits then, like one person being all powerful. Like everybody kind of has their nooks and crannies, but only together if they need to be is where they would be, you know, super powerful. It's like it makes every character in the series so far worth being there, right? Because they all have different strengths. And you kind of get this little, you're getting these, in the first four episodes, you're getting the pieces of the puzzle kind of all laid in front of you with some character development and stuff like that. And very well acted too. I should, on top of the writing and everything else in the world building, like the actors in it are great. I shouldn't say it's not. There are a fair amount of attractive people in the show. It's not like it's not as blatant as something like a CW show.
So funny.
But it's still television. I mean, everybody's still attractive. But it's not like they're not all like models from the cover of GQ or whatever. Like they've got a lot of people have a very kind of unique look to them.
It's funny you should say that because the main guy, Quentin Coldwater, your main character, we're watching like television and some preview comes on, trailer comes on for The Magicians. And Laura's like, oh, my God, it's Jason Ralph. And she went to college with the guy who plays Quentin.
No kidding.
She's not going to be like calling up Jason like tomorrow and be like gabbing it up. But it's like the same way like I'm acquainted with Ben and you're acquainted with, Kyle and whatnot. Like, but more in a sense like at one point in time they went to school together.
Right.
And she's seen him show up in different TV shows and different theatrical opportunities. And so she's like, oh my God. So, we'll probably end up watching the TV show, but I'm personally avoiding the show because I want to get through the books. And I have the second audiobook already because I'd use my credits. I want to get through all of those. But I did do a quick IMDb search just to sort of see Jason Ralph and then see some of the other people, and I'm already super confused because there are people that are like in 10 episodes and I'm like, okay, what? Because I'm in the book and I'm like, I guess they just tried to make this character, maybe they tried to make certain characters like there's this character Julia. I don't know if she's been a part of the TV show or not. She's on IMDb. Is this character Julia, I think, like a childhood friend of his?
I think I know who that is. I'm still not quite to the point where I've got everybody memorized.
You got every names. But there's just this girl that he had like a crush on. And it's like in the first like chapter of the book, he's bummed out because his best friend's with this girl he has a crush on. And like he mentions her a couple times. And then he gets to the school and then things happen in the school. And he only barely mentions her. And where I'm in the book, Julia is like hasn't been mentioned in the equivalent of like 8 chapters. And I'm looking on IMDb and I'm like, Julia's in 10 episodes. This is different.
Yeah.
So there are already probably some things that, for TV, they can't like you're saying, they probably in the first episode had to get through him into Break Bills, the name of the school, and then set up some elements of it in a much different way than the book can kind of, because the book's more of like a walking path where television has to make certain hops.
Yeah.
To sort of create a bigger picture because you literally have to juggle actors and give other characters more to do.
Yeah, and you've nailed it. They definitely flip-flop back and forth between outside and inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always black and white. Like sometimes it's Quentin outside, sometimes it's more inside. Like they mix, but I think they're using characters that were outside in the books very briefly as kind of like, all right, we need an anchor point. We need a character to follow outside so that we can still have an excuse to go outside. Because there are important things that happen outside of the school.
Okay.
And it's like, again, so far it's been nice that they're balancing that. It's about 75-25. Like it's mostly magic stuff, which is cool because that's what you want to watch the show for. Like I don't want to watch Law and Order with a little bit of magic in it, right? Like, I want a fantastic show in the idea that it's got,
it's 95% Break Bills and he recaps some of what happens outside. So it's really, I'm really fascinated. That's part of the reason why I wanted to finish the book to just sort of see, because I feel like it's a circumstance where if I loved Flash, the TV show, like, and I went down and tried to read the comics, I'd be like, this comic book kind of moves slow for me, even though like comic books like move fairly quickly. But you might be like, this is 5 issues that tells one like arc that can be accomplished in like two episodes of The Flash. So I'm really excited about it, though. It's I'm happy to hear that you are really interested in it with no prior book knowledge, because I was kind of interested in it, and you know, I had the book, so that's good. That's good. Good to know. And there's attractive people. Excellent. I love the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I would highly recommend it to anybody, not just like someone that's coming from the book or knowledge of the book. I would argue to say, even having not read the book, I don't think it would be something that would completely let you down. I'm sure there's differences. I'm sure there's going to be like book nerds that are just like, well, you know, I don't like the show because I'm a purist and blah, blah, blah. But I've got a funny feeling that I will like the books. I would, you know, just as much as like, say, Game of Thrones. Like, I feel like from what I've know of Game of Thrones and having read the books and watched the show and how true that show is to the books in a lot of ways, I can't say for sure, having not read The Magicians, but I get that feeling. Like, I think I get the feeling of care that's being put into making the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's probably what's carrying it over. But yeah, so I think you guys should check out The Magicians. Is it a sci-fi show or is it a showcase too. Show?
In the States, it's sci-fi.
But okay. I think in Canada, it's on Showcase, because I think one of the episodes I watched had this Showcase kind of title on it, which explains the swearing, because that's usually like, that's the same thing that I think Sex and the City was on. And
interesting, because yeah. Sci-fi is like the equivalent of what you would get like Mad Men on, and they don't really get to swear. They get to say, you know, bitch, and maybe they get away with one shit, but they don't. I think once an episode, every four or five episodes, they can get away with one F-bomb, but that's it. Like, you're not really doing the Game of Thronesy when you can drop a lot of.
Yeah, no. Well, slurs, and this isn't a lot. It's just, but it's what I like about it, the swearing in the show.
It's natural.
It's just natural. Yeah. It's like, I mean, this did not happen in the show, but like someone's head just blew up and then immediately someone drops an F-bomb. Like,
yeah.
Cause that's what would happen.
Right, right. Exactly. No, you wouldn't say fiddly sticks.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's pretty good that way.
Well, the books are all done. So I think that also will help the TV show.
Oh, for sure.
Some other series. So yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is, of course, brought to you by Tweaked Audio. You can go to tweakedaudio.com for high-performance noise-reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. The pick this week is from me. I don't remember exactly where I saw this. It might have been actually Phil Rude that shared it on Facebook. I can't remember. But it's a Conan the Barbarian sculpt on Sith TV, which is a Facebook page. And it's just Sith TV, as you would think it would be spelled, after Facebook.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really cool video. The music is from the Conan movies, which makes me want to go watch Conan. But it is incredible the amount of detail and work that goes into this sculpt, which is maybe 12 inches tall. Like the guy's head, the face of the sculpt is about the size of my thumb. Like it's not a huge sculptor, but everything on it has so much detail. It's a real work of art, and I can do it no justice other than just say, hey, look, go to the Sith TV Facebook page and check it out.
Yeah, the fur, he has this fur cloak, and to see him make the little notches in it, honestly, what blew me away, and it's the most mundane thing on a Conan work, but is the fact that he's holding ropes that is somehow holding a whole like bag with like bushels of scrolls. That to me was what blew me away.
Yeah,
I was like, whoa.
And there's so like he put all this work, like in the very beginning of the video, you're looking at all the different musculature on the back, right? You can't see any of it.
No, it's gone.
In the final sculpt. So, I mean, it was just, and I mean, it's justified. Like, I get it. As an artist, like, I draw basically naked people under clothes because that's how you know where the folds are in the clothes. That's how you know where the weight of the pose is. Like, I understand the under sculpt as much like an under drawing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine my under sculpt would be a lot looser than... than having all these different, like, I'm not going to do an anatomy, you know, underneath. Right. Like, for me, I don't draw, you know, pecs and abs and lats and delts and everything on a character that's going to be closed, I'll draw a big box that will represent the rib cage, and I'll draw balls that will represent the shoulders that will later get covered up, but not like individual muscle groups, which is what looked like went into this. Anyway, I mean, it all works in the end. It is freaking solid.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Joel just spends all his time drawing naked people and then putting on clothes. Then. Okay, fine.
I paid a lot of money to go to school to learn how to draw naked people. I'm going to talk about that for a long time.
Yeah. As you should.
Yeah. I miss figure drawing. I'm very, very out of practice. I would not feel at home at a life drawing session. It would be neither several would weeks. I. It would for be different for different reasons. Yeah. There's a naked person in the middle of the room. Yeah. Actually, sad fact about art school, the naked thing wears off almost immediately. Like you stop thinking about, you're challenging yourself to draw. So you're not thinking about the fact that there's a nude human in front of you. It's just very, yeah. Not to mention, all these, you know, art movies and television shows where the model in front of you is basically a version of a CW actor.
Yeah, exactly. No,
that is not the case. the case. And to be honest, pretty boring to draw. The more interesting models that I've drawn over the years would be like, you know, 65, 7-year-old women, you know, overweight men. Like just, it's a lot more interesting when you've got someone that is either average or above average in terms of their body type. It becomes a much more interesting drawing and harder to do, right? Because everybody's got the same skeleton, but everything moves and functions differently on different body types. Yeah. And I also had to, you know, always tip my hat to the people that are doing the nude modeling, because one, it's not easy. It's hard. It's hard work, hard physical work. But then also, like, you're naked in front of like 20 strangers. Like that takes some balls, if you pardon the pun.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And not all balls are the same.
Yeah. No. No, they're not. On that note, I'm going to wrap up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is, of course, provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. I did check the iTunes reviews. There were none. Sad face. So please, for a little other than 30 seconds of your time, you can help reach new listeners for this podcast. Just give us a review on iTunes. I can't see it unless you make a comment. Otherwise, the numbers just kind of ticks to 9 and I might not catch it, but please do check it out either in the American or the Canadian store. I do check both just because the Canadian store tends to be a little bit smaller in terms of our population. but yeah, it's iTunes review is a great way to reach new listeners for the show. So if you like it, go check us out on iTunes. And of course, there is also the Patreon, which is picking up. I'm happy to say the Citadel Cafe on patreon.com, as you would think, the way that you would find it. And I want to thank Alistair McFly, who has actually been on the show before. He became a patron just this morning. So I entered him into the Slack chat with the rest of the patrons. So if you see Alistair, please say hello. And if you want to support the show, if you get a little bit of value out of it and you want to put a little value back into it, go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. That's it for me. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. That is including my digital portfolio. So if you want to hire me to do some cool art stuff, that's where you can find me. Twitter is just my name. Most social media is just my name. Brockett, where can people find you online?
Oh, you can just find Biggest Fan Podcast. You can join the Facebook group. You can also see things there. It's just that awesome DM of mine, Kyle Ferguson, DM of my life. And we just talk about different random pop culture topics here and there. Next time we're going to record, we're going to talk about theme parks. I'm going to get into more detail about my trip to Disney and my experiences at Harry Potter World and that sort of thing. Kyle's dad actually works for Disney World. He runs a bar there. It's fascinating.
I did not know that.
It's fascinating to me. Can you imagine running your own, like, you know, not caricature booth, but let's say, like, Joel's art studio bar, you know, like that sort of themed thing.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. So. I it's funny. As much as I listen to podcasts from Garrett and Kyle, I don't know what their parents do. Like, well, I didn't until now. Or at least for Kyle.
you know, it's not something you usually lead with.
No, but, well, I mean, I think I've mentioned that my mother was a nurse, you know, at some point on the show, right? I mean, I suppose it's different. Like, both my parents are retired, so, like, their work life is not something they talk about because it's not happening anymore, right?
Yeah, exactly. I gotcha. I know she did something with the freezer that was hilarious.
Yeah. Thankfully, it didn't involve a patient, but, you know, that's all good. You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.